Good morning. Today's Daf and Kedushin Chaf Tes. We are starting on the bottom of Chaf Chesam and Beis. We are starting with the Mishnah. One more Mishnah regarding Kinyanim. Let's go. Rishos Hagavoa. So Bekesu Rishos Haheja Bechazaka. So we're discussing Kinyanim over here and compare and contrast. How is Kinyan done when two people are doing Kinyanim with one another? Well, we already know the answer to that question because that's what we've been discussing now for the last 4 or 5 days. We went over the various kinyanims in terms of how your kone, karka, and metatlin, and animals, large animals, small animals, v'chule, v'chule, evikinani, and we went through every kinyan. So we pretty much are, I wouldn't exactly describe us as experts in kinyanim, but in other words, we know a lot. We've gone through various halachas of kinyanim. So what are we doing in this mission? We're comparing and contrasting a kinyan bein adam l'chavero and a kinyan bein adam l'makom. Now, I say kinyan bein adam l'makom over here, where I'm just talking practically over here in terms of transacting with the Beis HaMikdash and the Gizbar. Right? In other words, we know that there is an account of the Beis HaMikdash. Right now, we're just talking practical. In other words, we haven't had a Beis HaMikdash in 2 millennia, so it hasn't been practical in some time. But the Beis HaMikdash has an account, and they have assets, and they have things that are going to be donated to the Beis HaMikdash, redeemed from the Beis HaMikdash. And so therefore, we're just going over very simple, straightforward halachas regarding how transactions occur when dealing with the Beis HaMikdash. In contradistinction to how kinyanim look when it's between you and I. Now, so that's what the Mishnah is telling us. So again, Rishus Gavoa Bekesef or Rishus Hedja Bechazaka. So when you're talking about Rishus Gavoa, a kinyan that's done between you and the Beis HaMikdash, so the operating mechanism of kinyanim is going to be done via Kesef. Masha'en came when it's you and I, it's going to be Chazaka. Now the Mishnah says Chazaka. Now at this point in time, we all know the Mishnah doesn't mean Chazaka. In fact, if you look at Rashi in the Mishnah, Rashi right away says Chazaka means Mashicha. We're just contrasting right now. So we're using a word that really illustrates the contrast. Kesef versus Chazaka. But Chazaka just simply means that when I'm doing Kinyan from you, I have to physically take the item. But that's not true when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, Kesef is what's the operating mechanism. We'll elaborate much more in the Gemara. So, and then, Amir Rasul Gavo, Kemisir Rasul Hajot. Now, when you make a pledge to give to the Beis HaMikdash, that's your Kinyan. Meaning that is what creates the Chiyuv, that is what creates the Kinyan, as opposed to Mr. Rasul Hajot. When you are doing a transaction between you and somebody else, so you have to hand it over. Okay. So obviously there is a very brief and short Mishnah. There's a lot compacted into the Mishnah. We're going to expand. We're going to open up the Mishnah. The Gemara starts off, So let's elaborate. In other words, what did the Mishnah mean? The Mishnah says that Rishus Gavo is Bekasef. So please explain. So Gizbar, Shanasamos Bebehema. So let's say a gizbar gives money for an animal. In other words, the gizbar wants to make a purchase. Okay, why would they want to purchase animals? Karbanos. In other words, obviously, they need a daily supply of karbanos, right? Minimum 2 a day. And so they want to make a purchase. So a purchase done by the gizbar. So now, they paid for the animal. That's it. They were calling the animal. Doesn't matter where the animal physically is. A kinyan was made. Now we know, because we've discussed this extensively, that if we're going to do a kinyan between you and me, so it has to be an actual mashicha. So Kate said, now let's go over the second point of the Mishnah. Let's understand that better. Let's unpack that. So how am I sure is the ola? So by the hektesh, I feel myself a olam kana. So behedja lo kana. So if I say that my house or my animal is now property of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, my animal, by the way, sure is the ola. In other words, you're actually rendering it a karban. But, okay, and the bias, obviously the bias is not going to be a karban. The bias now is just simply going to be owned by the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, Kedusha Saguf versus Kedusha Damim. It doesn't matter. The point is that the Amira is what creates the Kinyan. Masha'en Kain. In other words, if it's between you and I, just because I make a declaration, that is going to be insufficient. Good. Ad shiyimshach. 2 more words that I should have read, I just read. And that is that the bein adam l'chavero, it's only going to be a kinyan only when you do mashicha. Obviously, by the way, when we say mashicha, we're not talking about the house, right? The house cannot, you can't be moshech a house. But again, we're just contrasting. We're just doing a contrast over here between how can Yanim look between Bein Adam le Makom. I say Makom, I really mean Bein Adam le Beis HaMikdash and Bein Adam le Chaveru. Okay. Mashcho, we are still going to be elaborating. We're going to be unpacking. We're on the top of Chav Tesamad Aleph, and we're just elaborating. So Mashcho Manem, I'm sorry, Mashcho Bimanem, a person wants to purchase something from Hekdesh. Now I say purchase, we don't really mean purchase, we mean redeem. In other words, when something belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, so, and it's not going to be used in the base, and it's not going to be used on the Mizbech, i.e. it has Kedushas Damim, so what value does it have to the Beis HaMikdash? Whatever value it has. Meaning what they want to do is that it simply generates revenue. So they're going to redeem it. So over here now, we're going to be talking about the act of redemption and when exactly that redemption kicks in. Again, kinyan. So, mashcho b'manav lo speak livdoso ad she'amad b'masayim. So let's go over the following. Let's say that you want to redeem an item from the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't matter what the item is. It happened to have been appraised at 100 zuz. And now, and you actually even did mashicha. Meaning, you pull the item towards you. So, and at that point in time, its appraised price was 100. But you haven't paid for it yet. And then, between Mishicha and now when you go into your pocket to pay, it went up 100%. It's now 200 zuz. Okay? Whatever. These things. Whatever. In other words, maybe you took your time to pay. So, so now how much do you know? How much do you owe? No sim assign. So at that point in time, now you have to pay 200. No sim assign. My timer. Now, of course, it begs the question, why should that be? So, because of the pasuk in Parshas Bechukosai, when talking about redemption, the Torah describes that when is the redemption going to be activated? When you give the money. So in other words, money is what activates the pijon, and so therefore, you're going to have to pay 200. You did a mashicha when it was valued at 100. Yeah, but this is not Bein Adam L'Chavero. This is Bein Adam L'Beis HaMikdash. And this is pijon. And so therefore, it's not the kinyan has not been rendered until you actually did until you actually paid. Okay, now, is it going to work in the other direction? You don't have to wonder. Coming up. Mashcha masayim v'lo yispik livdoso ad she'amad b'manem. Now let's go in the opposite direction. Let's say you did same storyline. You did mishicha. You took your time to pay, but between mishicha and payment, so it went down in value. Went from 200 down to 100. So now what? So if we're gonna maintain the same argument, so that you only have to pay 100, right? Wrong. So mashcha masayim v'lo yispik livdoso ad d'shamad b'mana no sim asayim. So here you're gonna have to pay 200. So my time up. Because at this point in time, what we're going to say is that hedges should be no worse than your friend. Meaning, had this been your friend and you did mishicha at 200, you owe 200. I went down in value. Well, that's unfortunate for you. Meaning, it's yours and it's your loss to suffer. It's your depreciation. So we're not going to treat the Beis HaMikdash, the Bet HaGabayis, any worse than you would your friend. So basically, you saw what we did, by the way, is that we went in both directions in favor of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? You're going to hear this a number of times throughout Shas. You're not going to hear it in today's daf, but Yad Beis HaMikdash, Yad Gizbar. Okay, the exact expression right now escapes me, but Yad Hektesh, and there we go. Now I got it. Yad Hektesh Al HaYona, right? That's an expression that comes up again and again throughout Shas, and that is basically the idea of, look, right, we're always going to favor the Beis HaMikdash so that the Beis HaMikdash can generate the maximum amount of money so that they can operate. So, Padom and Masayim. Okay, so far, so good. So, let's go over another scenario. So, Padom and Masayim. The V'lo Yispik L'Moshcha Ad She'amad B'mana. Okay, so here now we're going to go, we're just going to reverse the order of operations. In other words, previously you did Mashiach and then you paid. Now we're going to go where you paid and then you do Mashicha. But again, it's all going to point in the same direction in terms of who we're going to favor. So, Padu B'Masayim, so you pay 200, V'lo Yispik L'Moshchad, Shamar B'Mana Nosem Masayim, and then it went down in value. So, but you're still, now I'm going to say you're still on the hook for 200. Well, you already paid. But in other words, but that's what you owed. You owe 200, you already paid 200. Again, because Kesef. Now, my time of an asana kesef akamla. Okay, again, because now when operating with the Beis HaMikdash, so kesef is king. In other words, that's what creates a kinyan. So you pay the 200. Okay. Pada b'manav alo hispik l'mashcha ad shama b'masayim asha pada padu v'enosin elamana. Okay, now what we're going to do is that we're going to have the same storyline, but now we're going to go in the other direction. You first paid 100, and then you took your time to do Mashiach. You didn't pick it up for a week later, 2 weeks later, whatever the time was. And then it went up to 200. So, ma shepada padui v'enosin elamana. So the pigeon is a pigeon, and you only give a money. At that point in time, you don't have to add. So amai hachinami neima lo yekor chedjo chamer mehekdesh. So the Gemara says, now at this point in time, I don't understand. Meaning, why aren't we going to favor the Beis HaMikdash? This is going to be, of the four scenarios that we just went through, this is going to be the only time where we leave it as it is. You paid 100, you get to walk away with it for 100. So so why should that be? So atu hejo la b'misha parakai. So in other words, over here, so we don't want to be under the umbrella of Misha Parah. Misha Parah is a Gemara. Misha Parah is a Gemara in Bava Metzia, right? Misha Parah is basically the idea of, you know, Dora Mabel, Dora Flaga. So what did they do? So they rescinded offers. In other words, that was a classic move of theirs. They made an offer, they rescinded the offer. And Dora Mabel, Dora Flaga, so we all know what happened to that. In other words, so when you make an offer and you put it out there and you rescind the offer, so on one hand, you have every right to do so. On the other hand, doing so habitually, it leads to terrible results. In other words, there's no, on the books, you can rescind your offer. But for somebody who does it, it's frowned upon significantly. Okay? Probably not properly expressing how bad it is. In other words, it's not legally binding, but it's bad. And so the Gemara says over here that in the scenario where you are poda b'mana, in other words, you paid 100. And it happens to be that the Mashiach wasn't done until later. So at that point in time, you only have to give 100. Why not 200? So the Gemara says, because we don't want you to be under the umbrella of Misha Parah. In other words, at that point in time, understandably, you're in a position where, like, I'd like to rescind my offer. Right? So we don't want that person to be under that umbrella. And so therefore, we're basically going to say, okay. In other words, you paid the 100, you get to take it. Adkan, that takes us to the end of our first sugya of the morning. And so we are now officially done with Kinyanim, which means that we're done with the first parak. Is that right? No, it's not right. In other words, we have another 10 more blot to go before we finish with the first parak. So what are we going to do now? Probably the 10 most popular dapim in all of Kiddushin coming up starting right now. Okay, it's a little bit unclear in terms of what it's doing here, meaning what we've been doing up until now has been a very constant flow. It's been a stream. We started with Kinyanim in terms of Ishas, right? Because this is Kedushin. And we're going to be talking about the method in which you're going to enter into marriage. Begimel Derachim, three ways in which a man is Kona Esa Isha, Kesef Shtar Ubiya. And from there, as long as we talked about Kinyanim, so we continue talking about Kinyanim. So from Beis to Yudal, we talked about Kinyan Isha. From Yudal to about Chav Beis, we talked about Kinyan Eved Ivri. Then we went on to Kinyan Avadim, Kinyan Behemagasa, Kinyan Behemadaka. We then talked about Kinyan Metaltalin. Did I skip Kinyan Karka? Maybe I did. But you get the idea. Meaning for the first almost 30 blot of the Masechta, so we've been dealing with Kinyanim. Now, as we are about to embark on a very famous, popular discussion here in Kiddushin, so what is the connective tissue? Not clear. Okay, there are attempts to explain how exactly this next sugya is connected to the previous sugya, right? I saw notes, I saw suggestions, but right now, okay, it's just, I could leave it off. I'm fine leaving it off right now. That's a bit of an oddity. Let's begin. Kol mitzvah sa ben al-av, anashim chayav, anashim peturos. Any mitzvah that ben al-ha'av, son on the father. It's not a clear term. I'm going to leave it right now in its ambiguous translation. in a moment, you don't have to wait that long, we're going to clarify exactly what the Mishnah means. So anashim chayav anashim peturos. Men are obligated, women are exempt. V'chol mitzvos av al haben echad anashim ve'echad anashim chayavim. However, mitzvos av al haben, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to leave it in a state of opaque, an opaque translation. And again, just a moment, we're going to clarify. V'chol mitzvos eser she'asman gram anashim chayavim anashim peturos. Time bound mitzvos, men are obligated, women are exempt. V'chol mitzvos eser she'lo asman gram echad anashim ve'echad anashim chayavim. Any non-time bound mitzvah, so men and women are going to be obligated. Okay, v'chol mitzvos lo sa'aseh, bein she'asman grama, bein she'lo asman grama, echad anashim ve'echad anashim chayavim. When it comes to negative prohibitions, so whether or not they are time bound or whether they are not time bound, men and women are both obligated. Chutz mi bal taka, bal tashchus, bal tetam lemesim. Three notable exceptions, three lavim in the Torah that does not include women. One is baltakif, right? Cutting off the corners of your head. In other words, we are supposed to have hair growing on the corners of our head, otherwise known as sideburns, or peyos. Okay, various menhagim in terms of how to grow your peyos, or how the sideburns should look. But in other words, but you need sideburns. Okay, and that's baltakif. Baltashchis, that's shaving your face with a razor. Okay, the Gemara in Makos, we saw it extensively, discusses exactly the parameters of the sisser. It's an issur in the Torah. Now you can't take a razor and shave your face with a razor. Meanwhile, women are not bound by that issur. And finally, Baal Tatam Lemesim. Kohanim cannot expose themselves to Tumas Meis. Women Kohanim are allowed to. Okay, these are the three exceptions, right? With every rule, there's an exception. Over here with this rule, there's not one, but three separate exceptions. Stay tuned. Much later on, not today, we're going to go over why these are exceptions to the rule. Anyway, so what we have over here in our Mishnah is basically we're bisecting the mitzvahs of the Torah. Some of them apply to women, some of them don't. And we bisect in many different ways. Okay, we basically take the totality of the mitzvahs of the Torah, and we cut it this way, we cut it that way, we cut it another way, in terms of when women are obligated, when women are exempt. Okay, so obviously what we're going to do now in the Gemara is we're going to analyze the Mishnah. That's all we do with the Gemara, right? The Gemara is a parish on the Mishnah. So over here, the Mishnah demands a commentary because the first part of the Mishnah, where we're talking about mitzvahs that apply father to son, so in the Mishnah itself, it's not perfectly clear which direction we're talking about. So immediately the Gemara seeks to clarify. Michael mitzvahs ha-ben al-av. So what in the world does that mean? We're talking about the mitzvahs that the son is obligated to do for his father. And right now, let's call that kibud av v'aim. That's the best example. So, nashim peturos v'atanya. So the Gemara says, then you mean to tell me that women are exempt from the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim? It's simply not true. Ish ein li ela ish. Ish aminayin kishu amir ish imo v'aviv tirao hare kan shnayim. Okay, so when the Torah says tirao, that's in the plural. So you have to fear them. In English, the word you does not translate well, distinguishing between singular and plural, right? We don't have it in the English language. It's not part of our constructed language, you in the singular versus you in the plural. However, Belashon Kodesh, and quite frankly, at least the other languages I know, so we do have it. But right now, obviously, we only need to worry about Lashon HaKodesh, and that is Tira'u. So you, again in the plural, so you have to fear. So that means to say that the mitzvah of Mora, and we're going to talk later on about the relationship between Mara and Kavod. We're going to go over actual definitions of Mara and Kavod that's coming up, not in today's daf, later on. So anyway, so you, meaning both son and daughter, have a mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim. Kibud Av V'Aim, Yiras Av V'Aim. So what our proposal was is that only sons are obligated in mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim and not daughters. It's simply not true. So I'm Rav Yehuda Achikamar. So what we obviously have to do is we have to go back to the Mishnah and we have to propose a new pshat in the Mishnah. And so let's do that. I'm Rav Yehuda Achikamar kol mitzvos haben mutal salav la'sosolev. No. Mitzvos haben. The mitzvos that you have to do for your son. Okay. And again, you go back to the Mishnah, you try to read that into the Mishnah. It's a little bit strange. The language of the Mishnah is really unclear, which is why when I initially read the Mishnah, I left it unclear. But now we have to say this pshat because it's the only viable pshat. And that is called mitzvos haben. Hamutelis ala av. The mitzvahs that impact the son. that is required by the father, lasos levno, to do for his son, on those mitzvos, anashim chayavim and anashim paturos. Let's try to say a little bit clearer, and that is the mitzvos that the father has to do for his son. On those mitzvos, it's only the father and not the mother. Now, Gemara goes on to explain. Tanila had the Tanu Rabbanan. So we're going to have a brisa, totally supportive of what we just said. I've chaybev, no. So what is the father obligated to do for his son? Lam olo, to give him a mila. Lift oso, pichin aben. Lam do Torah, teach him Torah. Lasia isha, marry him off. Lam do umnos, teach him a profession. Yeshomrim aflasito b'mayim. Others add to teach him how to swim. Rabbi Yehuda Amar kol sheina malam is b'no umnos malam de listos. If you don't teach your son a profession, so you're teaching him how to steal. So listos akadach, the Gemara says, what do you mean? Teach him how to steal. You're not actually teaching him how to steal. But elakilo malam listos. So obviously, we don't mean you're teaching him how to steal, but it's ki'ilu. In other words, in the absence of a job and the need to generate money, so what are you going to do? So you're going to do things that are not legal. You're going to steal. Okay, so it's ki'ilu. Okay, and so here we begin. Okay, some of the most classic discussions, and this is it. These are obviously very popular Gemaras, and let's make our way through. What we just went through together is just short of a half dozen mitzvos that a father's obligated to do for the son. Again, contextually, the reason why we're going over this now is because the Mishnah introduces the idea that the mitzvah is only on the father, not on the mother. Okay, and we're going to go through each one now together. So, limulo, mitzvah number one, mila. Obviously, by the way, I'm sure you noticed that we're just basically following the progression of the development of life. In other words, mila is at 8 days, pidgin aben is at 30 days, right? What was after pidgin aben? Limud haTorah, right? Obviously, post 30 days, right? The Gemara is going to go a little bit over when should you start, what you should start teaching. Seder HaLimud, all coming up later on, not in today's daf. Lahasio Isho, okay, that's right around 18 years of age. I'm following the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, right? Obviously, in contemporary times, 18 is a bit young. The Lamdo Omnus, teach a profession. Well, that one's interesting, by the way. In other words, based on my thesis of progression, meaning teaching a profession after you get married, right? It seems to be that should be reversed. Stay tuned. We are going to be discussing that later this morning. That's coming up. And then when the Yesh Omrim adds swimming, I that doesn't bother me because, in other words, that's a Yesh Omrim position, so he's not following any progression. So the teaching of swimming could be whatever. Let's move on. So so over here now we're going over the mitzvah that is incumbent on the father to do for his son. So we're going to start with the mitzvah of Mila. So lamolo minalan dechsev yamal Avram is Yitzchak beno. Good. So Avram gives his son Yitzchak Abris. Ve'echad lamale avua mechayev be dina limimele. Father is absent. So now who is the mitzvah upon? So dechsev yamal lachem kol zachar. So the pasuk says himol lachem. So himol lachem again translated to English. So you will be giving the mila, but again, it doesn't translate well. The lachem over here is not talking about the father. It's talking about an institution, right? Himo lachem. You, it doesn't work well, right? But you over here in the plural. So you, the institution, are going to be giving the mila. We assume over here the institution is talking about Beis Din. And finally, the fact that you yourself, in other words, in failure where your father did not give you a mila, and the Beis Din didn't give you a mila, and now you're all grown up, and how do I know that you're required to give a mila? So the Gemara cites a pasuk also in Parshas Vayera, the end of Parshas Vayera, that teaches that you have to give a mila. I want to just immediately correct myself. Not Parshas Vayera, Parshas Lech Lecha. Okay. Anyway, so we have now basically three steps in the mitzvah of mila. First and foremost, it is incumbent on the father to do the mila. Number two, in absentia of the father, then it's the institution of Beis Din that is required to do so. And finally, number three, if both of those did not do it for whatever reason, so then you yourself have a mitzvah to do mila. Failure to do the mitzvah of mila will result in kares. There is a classic. I'd say famous because, you know, I'm sure you've heard shir. Baruch Hashem, I've heard a number of shirim on this topic in terms of when exactly the Kari's penalty is going to kick in. Okay? But we'll leave that alone. Our objective over here is to get through the daf. Ihi minalan de lo mechayve. Now, as far as mom is concerned, so she does not have an obligation. Okay, there is a parallel sugya in the Gemara Avodah Zarah. Okay, and I hope I remember correctly. It's Chav Zayin. Okay. The Gemara over there discusses whether a woman can even give a milah. In other words, whether it would be a kasher milah if a woman were to do it. Obviously, the Gemara over there cites what as evidence. That one's easy. Tzipora. In other words, Tzipora gives a milah to her son. Or at least that's a simple reading of the Pesukim in the Torah. Okay, so there is a parallel discussion to be had whether or not women can even do a milah. But right now, that's not our discussion exactly. Our discussion is whether or not there's an obligation on mom to give a milah. And by the way, in other words, when we say give a milah, that doesn't necessarily mean to do the actual milah itself. It could just simply mean, in other words, you know, get somebody to do it. We'll get there. Perfect. So, okay, so a deek in the pasuk in the Torah, it's osov lo osa. Okay, so now Phil asks, so let's just quickly bring it up, and then that is that we have a drasha that tells us that the father's obligated to the exclusion of the mother, the mother's not obligated. So so why do we have a drasha? Just simply say it's a mitzvah, esse shas mangram, it's a time bound mitzvah. Okay, Baruch Hashem, heard number of shirim. I probably even said a shir or two on this topic. But anyway, but right now, for our purposes, we could just simply take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos is bothered by this very question. Osov lo osav im tomar. Right, Phil, he asked exactly your question. So lamali kra tepukle de mitzvah esse shas mangram, hu shenimo b'shmina le desa v'nashim peturos. Just simply say it's a time bound mitzvah. Interesting answer of Tosos over here. And by the way, Baruch Hashem, there are many answers to this question. But just to touch on Tosos' answer. So in other words, there is no upper limit. For something to be time bound, so it has to be bound on both sides. There has to be a beginning and there has to be an end. The mitzvah of meal only has a beginning and does not have an end. So it's only bounded on one side. That's not considered a time-bound mitzvah. Okay, that in of itself already is a lot to think about. Meanwhile, this is a famous question. So many answers to this question. And of course, we're going to go on. So, Ashkechan miyad ledoros minalan. Back to the Gemara. So the Gemara now wants to know. Great. So there's a mitzvah. Avraham, not Sarah. If Avraham's not there, so then Beis Din. Just great to think about. Who's the Beis Din in the time of Avraham? Okay, I guess maybe Yeshiva Shame. Anyway, and if not Beis Din, then you yourself. All that's really good. Where are we right now? We're in Parshas Lech Lecha. Okay, good. I already corrected myself once today. We're in Parshas Lech Lecha, and therefore these are not mitzvah ledoros, meaning these are the avos, and obviously these are our patriarchs, and there are role models and v'chule v'chule. But that's not why we do mitzvahs of the Torah. The Rambam writes very clearly. The Rambam, you're going to find this most clearly in Pirsha Mishnayos, in the Mishnayos in Chulin. Okay, but not for now. Anyway, but the Rambam writes very clearly that the only reason why we're chayv in any mitzvah in the Torah is because of post-Mamad Har Sinai. Or let's start at Mamad Har Sinai. Anything that is issued at Mamad Har Sinai is a mitzvah. Anything prior to that is simply not a mitzvah. So although we're citing the psukim regarding Avram Avinu, that's only miyad. But how do I know ledoros? How do I know that it applies for generations as well? Ledoros minal tan de beirav yishmal kamakum shenemar tzav enu ella zirus miyad uledoros. When you see the word tzav, tzav in the Torah is code for three things. Number one, zirus. Number two, miyad. Number three, ledoros. The Gemara goes through each one. Zeros, tichsiv, etzavitz, yoshu, v'chazke, v'amtzeu. So number one, Zeros. Okay, you have to do it with alacrity. You have to be excited about it. Okay, in other words, before we get to any kind of heavy-duty musr, which I'm not going to get into right now, but in other words, you got to take care of it as quickly as possible. Miyad ledoros. Numbers two and three is that it applies both presently and also for future generations as well. Okay, good. So in other words, how do I know that everything instructed to Avraham Avinu was not just for Avraham Avinu, but it was for future generations as well? Tzav. The word tzav in any form, tzav, tziva, tzivui, in any form means that it's going to not only be for his time, but also be for future generations as well. Okay, so we went over the mitzvah meal, and the fact of the matter is that the mitzvah meal is on the father to the exclusion of the mother. We cited Pesukim, we went through Tosfos, we're up to the next stage of life, and that's Pidgin Aben. Not that much later, 3 weeks later, Pidgin Aben. So Livdo, so Minalan, and now Minalan, the Gemara's question over here is, how do I know the mitzvah is on the father to the exclusion of the mother? Because that's the whole discussion over here in our Gemara. So Minalan Dichsev, Kol Bechor Banecha Tifte. So Kol Bechor Banecha Tifte. So the so that is a mitzvah for you to be podit your son. Now, in the absence of the father, so what's next? So he has to be poda himself. Notice over here, by the way, that we skipped a step. Previously by Bris Mila, so we went father, in his absence, Basin, and in the Basin's absence, then you yourself. Obviously, after you become a gadol. Over here by Pidgin Aben, I don't know why, but Basin is removed from the picture. Curious in terms of why that is. I don't have an explanation. But anyway. So, Livdos, Aminalan. I know I read that already. Vehechidol parke avo amechai vila mefrikei. Dichsiv tifte tipade. So, even though the pasuk says tifte, so you could darshan it tipade. Tipade, that's reflexive. Right? In other words, you will be redeeming yourself, if necessary. So so far we just established that it's a mitzvah on the father to redeem his son, which again, that's what we're looking to do over here. And then in addition to that, we're also looking to clarify and to source, how do I know that it's a mitzvah on the father to the exclusion of the mother? So this reasoning over here is going to be a bit of a circle. Okay. And that is as follows. If you have a requirement to be poda yourself, you have a requirement to be poda others, and if you are not required to be poda yourself, you're not required to be poda others. Nafsha, and how do I know that a woman is not obligated to redeem herself? Well, in other words, using that kri uksiv, right, the way it's written and the way it's pronounced, and because we have that multiple layering of the pasuk, so now I know that anyone where someone's obligated to redeem me, I then become required to redeem myself. If no one's obligated to redeem me, so then I'm not required to redeem myself. And how do I know that no one's required to redeem her? So, the mitzvah of Pidgin Aben is only on your sons and not on your daughters. Okay. So now, if you want, basically, you can, that was a bit of a windy road, and you could just basically retrace the step to go backwards, and maybe it becomes a little bit clearer. So basically, it's, you are not obligated to be poda your daughter. Your daughter, therefore, does not have anyone obligated to redeem her. Therefore, she cannot redeem herself. Because she can't redeem herself, therefore, she can't redeem others. Okay, meaning even her son. Okay, right? Just basically, I did the three steps. I just did the three steps in the other direction. Maybe it's clearer, but I admit it's a bit of a windy road. Tana Rabbanan. Okay. Fascinating Gemara is coming up right now in terms of Kedima. Okay, what if now you have two mitzvahs to do? Which one comes before what? Now, obviously, this is a really, in other words, that's an open-ended question. We can ask it in so many different permutations, but right now we're just going to limit it. Obviously, we're going to just follow the Gemara right now, but the Gemara is going to be limiting it to the mitzvah pidgin. Tana Rabbanan, who lived those? Uveno livdos. Let's say the following: you're now later on in your life, you were the firstborn, and your father never redeemed you. So you have an outstanding obligation to redeem yourself. In addition to that, you also just had a child, Mazel Tov. And so now you also have to redeem your son. So right now you have to give five salaim two times over, once for yourself and once for your son. So who lived those, who no lived those? Who couldn't live no? So you come before your son. You have to redeem yourself and then your son. And obviously, if you have the money, so fine. So then it's just an order of operations and there's no big deal. However, what if you're limited in resources and you only have five salaim? Then what do you do? Hold that thought. Rav Yehuda Amar Beno Kod Moshe Zeh Mitzvah Sal Al Aviv Vizeh Mitzvah Beno Alav. So, and as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, your son comes before you. Why? Because when you are obligated to redeem yourself, that was principally, fundamentally not your mitzvah. That was your father's mitzvah. It's just that for whatever reason he didn't do it. Huh. But in other words, but now when you have a son, so whose fundamental mitzvah is that? That's your fundamental mitzvah. So Rabbi Yehuda will tell you that you should take care first and foremost of the fundamental mitzvah of you redeeming your son. And then afterwards you can make up the fact that your father didn't redeem you. Okay. Now Amrav Yirmiyahakol Modim Kol Hechadaleka Ala Chamesh Shalayim. So now, all this is really more theoretical than practical. Why? Because, in other words, what are we talking about over here? In other words, you have enough money to redeem both. And if you have enough money to redeem both, so then what you're going to do is, you'll just simply redeem both. Okay, fine. There's an order of operations of how to do it, who comes first, but fine. Obviously, the practical nature of this discussion is when your resources are extraordinarily limited. You only have five salim to your name. Okay. Right? Another shir often said over is, if you only have five salim to your name.
What else
are you doing? Right? Are you really now supposed to part with your remaining five salim and become totally impoverished?
Mitzvah, the limit on that,
20%. Correct. Okay, so what I'm going to do right now is I'll raise it as an issue, but we're going to move on because we're just dealing with the simple pshat of the Gemara today. So Kol Hecha Deleik Alechamei Shalaim, we're on the very top of Chav Tesamid Beis. So if all you have is but five Shalaim, so who Karnim Lev No My Time and Mitzvah Zugufei Adife. So what Rav Yirmiyah is telling us is the following: you have the conundrum, you have to redeem yourself, you have to redeem your son, and you only have but five Shalaim to your name. We're not going to debate. No one's going to debate this issue right now. Whose mitzvah should you take care of? Your mitzvah. In other words, it's what's called mitzvah saguf. In other words, you have an outstanding obligation to redeem yourself. That should come first and foremost. And there's nothing more to talk about. However, ki pligi, so then, if there's nothing more to talk about, so why do we just read a brisa where there's a machlokas? Ah, because hechadika chamesh meshubadim v'chamesh b'nei chorin. So what you have is the following over here. You have five slime, and you had five slime of property, and you sold that five slime of property. Okay. So now you owe the Kohen. You owe the Kohen two times over. You owe him once for you and once for your son. Oh. And so now basically the following, such an interesting question coming up. Does the Kohen have a lien on the outstanding obligation? You owed him now five slaim for a very long time. Okay? In other words, since you were 30 days old. Now, maybe what we'll do is we'll give a pass from day 30 until bar mitzvah. Okay? Because you were a minor. But still, in other words, at this point in time, you have your own son. So for a really long time right now, you owe the Kohen money. So does he have a lien against that obligation? The Gemara says, that's what's on the table over here. That's exactly what we're deliberating. So Rabbi Yehuda Savrim Milva Tichsi Batorah Kiksuva Bishar Damya. So Behani Chamesh. So Perak Lebrei. Vazakon Vitarif Leil Chamesh Mishubadim Lididei. So as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, so not only is an outstanding obligation, so it is secured. The Kohen has a shibud on that obligation. What? How can the Kohen have a shibud on that obligation? Shibudim are only created when it's a contractual obligation. Is this a contractual obligation? Rav Yehuda will tell you, yes, it is. It is a contractual obligation. Where's the contract? Open up a Sefer Torah. In the Sefer Torah, what you find is the obligation that you have to owe, that you owe five slime to the Kohen when you have a firstborn. In this case, you yourself are the firstborn, and has gone unpaid all these years. Rabbi Huda will tell you that is kiksuva bishtar damya. Now, it's not obviously your classic contract. Your classic contract is a note given directly from the borrower to the lender, saying you owe me the money. Okay, sorry about that.
No, I owe you them.
Huh? I owe you a note. So, and that is usually what a contract looks like. A contract does not usually come in the form of a pasuk in the Torah. But Rav Yehuda will argue that if you have a pasuk in the Torah stating the obligation, that is considered like a contractual obligation, that's a milva bishtar equivalent, and therefore there's a shibud. So now what you'll do is the following, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So you'll take your b'nei charin and you're going to use it in order to pay the pigeon of your son. And now what the Kohen's going to do is he's going to go after the buyer. Rather amazing. And the buyer's going to say, why are you coming after me? Oh, because of the outstanding obligation. Right? Was it contractual? According to Rabbi Yehuda, yes it was. It's in the Torah. Okay, such an interesting position. And the Virabanan, Savri Milva, Dixibaris, Alafki Ksuva Bishar Danya. Vilkach mitzvah dukufe adif. And as far as the Chachamim are concerned, so they're gonna tell you that a milva dichsibaraisa, a milva written in the Torah, is not contractual equivalent. It's not a milva bishtar, and therefore mitzvah dukufe adif. There is no lien, there's no way that you can go after the buyer, and therefore the only thing that you have remaining are the five coins that you have available, and with that, who are you going to be poda? Yourself, because mitzvah degufei adif. Okay, good. Adkan, that takes us to the end of that conundrum. We have but one more conundrum to go over. Right? Obviously, by the way, you can these questions can go on and on. The Gemara is just limiting it to two. So far, we dealt with the conundrum of what if I have myself to redeem and my son to redeem? Next one. Tana Rabbanan Livzos is Benova Lalos Larego. Potus Benova Achar Kach Ola Larego. So, you have the mitzvah of Pidgin Aben, and you also have the mitzvah of Aliyah Larego. And they both cost. In other words, Aliyah Larego costs. Okay. Anyone travel? Traveling costs. And the question now becomes, what should I do? In other words, right now, I have to redeem my son, that's five shalim, and I got to buy a plane ticket in order to go to Yerushalayim because of Aliyah Larego. Okay, I know back then it wasn't the plane, but it doesn't matter. It's traveling costs. So the Podes, Benova Achar, Kachola Larego. So do Pidgin Aben, and then do Aliyah Larego according to the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Ola Larego, Achar, Kach, Podes, Beno, and Rabbi Yehuda will tell you, no, opposite. Shizu mitzvah overis, vizu mitzvah she'ino overis. And Rav Yehuda's argument is as follows. You know the story with Aliyah Larego, and that is it's a missed opportunity. In other words, Pidgin Aben, that mitzvah will remain well after Yontif is over. But after Yontif is over, you have lost your opportunity to do the mitzvah of Aliyah Larego. So if I have now a choice, and I have to make a choice between a mitzvah overis and a mitzvah she'ino overis, so then you have to take advantage of the mitzvah overis. Otherwise, you will lose the opportunity. It's a very simple argument. Now, Bishlam of the Rav Yehuda Kedekamar Taima. In fact, the Gemara now, after going over the Braisa, says, you know what? Rav Yehuda makes a lot of sense because he argued his position. But Ela Rabbanan Mai Taimai. But what about according to the Chachamim? So, Da'amar Kol, Kol Bechor Benechet Hivdeh V'hadar V'lo Yeira'u Panay Reikam. So, what the Chachamim will say in response is, quote a pasuk from Parshas Kisisa, where there the Torah says that you'll be podeh, and then v'lo yiru panai rekam, meaning the sequence in the psukim. Now, in other words, there's no svara, there's no argument over here. It's just simply, I'm reading the psukim, I'm darshaning the psukim. And the psukim are talking about sequence in terms of which has kedima. And Pidgin Aben will be kodem, the mitzvah of Aliyah Larego. But what we are not hearing in the Gemara is, well, how do you counteract the argument of mitzvah overis versus mitzvah she'eno overis? And obviously over here, there's a lot of follow-up over here. We're going to go on. But the Gemara only just began the discussion regarding which should come first. As long we're on the mitzvah pidgin aben, so we're going to go over here a basic halacha. You have five firstborn sons through five wives. You have to be poda all of them. Tamalamer kol b'chor b'necha tifta. So the kol b'chor b'necha, every one of them. So the Gemara says, Pshita bepeterechem talarechmana. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Without that, I would have thought otherwise. The mitzvah pidgin aben is a function of Peter Rechem, being the first one to go through the Rechem. So over here, if you have five wives, each one of them has a firstborn, of course there's going to be a pidyon for each and every one of them. And before you darshan kol b'chor banecha, we knew that already. So the Gemara says, ma'u detei manelev b'chor b'chor minach laman man lahalan reishis ono, afkan reishis ono kamash malan. So the Gemara says, well, I would have thought that the mitzvah of pidyon aben will follow in suit with the mitzvah of nachala. And that is that we know when it comes to Yerusha, there's only one firstborn. And that's going to be the father's firstborn. Either maybe other firstborns of other wives of mothers. In fact, right, the Torah goes out of its way to say, I don't care which wife it is, and I don't even care if it's the wife that you don't particularly like. Right? When it comes to the mitzvah of Nachala, we're always going to be following the father's firstborn. So I might have thought that the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen will be following the mitzvah of Nachala. So that's the Hava Amina Kamash Malan. The Chiddush is no. The Chiddush is that when it comes to the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, Peter Rechem. Alulam do Torah. Let's finish up over here. We're up to the mitzvah of Limud Torah. So we discussed Mila, we discussed Pidyon HaBen, and now we're up to the mitzvah of Limud Torah. Minal and Dichsiv, V'Limud Torah, Mosam is Benechem. So again, the first thing that we're establishing over here is that it's a mitzvah on the father to teach his son. So the pasuk says, V'Limud Torah, Mosam is Benechem. It's pretty clear. So the Gemara says, V'Echad Elohim Meravo, Amechayvi, Lemegmer Nafshe Dichsiv, V'Limud, Ulimud Tem. So not only is it a mitzvah for the father to teach, but in the absence, if for whatever reason the father didn't teach his son, son has an obligation to teach himself. Once again, by the way, just noting the contrast by the mitzvah of Mila, so we had a Beis Din backup. In other words, in the event that the father doesn't do the mitzvah of Mila, then Beis Din, if Beis Din doesn't do it, he himself has to do it. And now on the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen and in the mitzvah of Mila, so I'm just observing that, there is no Beis Din backup plan. Okay.
Why don't we follow this story of Moshe's wife? Because she was the backup to Moshe to the Brit Mila.
Right. Our Gemara doesn't discuss it. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah, I touched on it earlier this morning. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah touches on that very point. But our Gemara doesn't discuss it. So the, now, Ihi Menalim Dula Mechaiva. Okay, again. So the first thing we establish is the mitzvah on the father. Next thing we're looking to establish is that the father, to the exclusion of the mother is not obligated to teach her son Torah. So dichsiv v'limad tem ulamad tem. And here we're going to do the same thing that we did earlier. In other words, it's going to be a little bit of a windy road, but we're going to get there. Kol mishkoshe mitzuv loma mitzuv lamei v'choshe ne mitzuv lomod ena mitzuv lamei. Anyone who has an obligation to learn has an obligation to teach. Anyone who does not have that obligation does not have the other. How do I know that women do not have the obligation to learn Torah? Dichsiv v'limad tem ulamad tem. So kol she'achem mitzuv lamdo mitzuv lamed es atzma. V'chol she'ein achem mitzuv lamdo ein mitzuv lamed es atzma. If others are not obligated to teach you, you do not have an obligation to teach yourself. So minan she'ein achem mitzuv lamdo. How do I know that others do not have the obligation to teach her? Damakrav v'limad tem osam es b'nechem. Okay, and again, I could do what I did earlier. I'm going to pass on that right now. In other words, I could just simply, I can retrace and go in the reverse, and it'll help see it a little bit clearer. But basically, there is no obligation for the mother to teach her son. Tanu Rabbanan, hu lomod uveno lomod. Once again, now, well, let's do this again. We're going to go over the triage of what if I have an obligation to learn, but I also have an obligation to teach my son. Meaning no one taught me Torah, but I also now, and I'm later in life, and I already have a son. So now, which one should come first? Hu konam livno? According to the Tanakhama, you first take care of your own requirement to learn Torah. And again, the Gemara is talking here about resources, meaning that the assumption, of course, is that it's going to cost money to hire somebody to teach you. And so therefore, where should those resources go? First to you, then your son. Rabbi Yehuda Amar in Beno Zaris, Umemulach, V'tamudu Miskan B'yado, Beno Kodmo. So Rabbi Yehuda will take a qualitative approach to answer this question. And that is, look, if your son's really sharp, interesting word over here, Memulach, literally translated as salty, obviously over here, that translation is not good. But in other words, contextually, we know exactly what it means. It means if your son's really bright and really sharp and really is able to grasp and he's fantastic at learning. So then Rabbi Yehuda will tell you, you know what? Then you should first spend those resources on your son. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the story, and that is regarding Rabbi Yaakov, who was the son of Rav Acha bar Yaakov, where dad sent him to go learn by Abaye. And Kiyasa, Chazi Lave, Mechadon Shmaite. And so he went there and he didn't succeed in learning. Okay. It's not a new phenomena, meaning it's real life, and some people are really good at it and some people are not. And it's all fine. It's all good. So Kiyasa Dola Mechadon Shmaite. Amr Leana Adif Naminach. So Tovatam Eidolana. So Rav Acha says to his son Yaakov, look, this the learning thing is not necessarily for you, right? And so therefore, what I'll do is I'll go, hey, right? You stay home, right? You mind the shop, and I'll go learn. Okay. I'm saying this, by the way, obviously, right? In other words, these kinds of things needed to be said with the correct bedside manners, but I'm sure back in the day, in other words, they were able to handle the truth a lot better than we are. So anyway, so Shama Abai Dekahava Ase. Now, Abaye hears now, who's coming to town to learn? Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Previously, he sent his son, but he saw that his son wasn't really, in other words, it wasn't working out. So now, Rav Acha bar Yaakov is coming. This is a big deal. So, Shama Abaye dekahava ase ava hu mazik be rabbanan da Abaye dechiavo adle betrain afilu biyamama have mitzake. And so the Gemara tells the following story, and that is that in the yeshiva, in the base measures of Abaye, so there was a mazik lurking around. And this was a really, really strong mazik. The mazik would attack two people. Normally, a mazik would not attack two people. And the mazik would attack during the day. Normally, the mazik does not attack during the day. And Amar lehu lalesev le'inishu shpiza. Now, Abaye wants to get rid of the mazik. And Abaye himself really struggled to get rid of the mazik. He couldn't. But Rav Acha bar Yaakov now is coming to town. So he's telling all the locals, look, I know when people come to learn in Beis Medrash, I know you host. My instructions are very clear to everybody here in town. Nobody host. Nobody. So Amalei Lolesav Inishu Shpiza Ve'efsha Demisrachish Nisa. Because what's going to happen now is the miracle is going to occur. You watch. Al Bas. So he comes up now. This is Rav Acha bar Yaakov coming into town to learn in the yeshiva of Abaye. When he failed to find a host, he doesn't know why nobody's hosting him. But when he failed to find a host, so he went up. Bas. Bas in Aramaic means that he went to go lie down. Where? In the Beis Medrash. Be'ahu Be'rabanan. In the Beis Medrash. V'idmele kitanid d'shiver v'shvase. Now the snake appears to him, the mazik appears to him like a snake, like a seven-headed snake. V'chokriya d'kara nasar chad resha. So what did Rav Acha bar Yaakov do? He davened. And in the davening, what did he do? He bowed down. With every time that he bowed down, one of the heads of the snake fell off. Amru l'macha ilo yisrachish nisa sakintin. And so the next morning, Rav Acha bar Yaakov has words with Abaye. He's not happy. In other words, look, that was some night last night in the Beis Medrash. And had it not been a miracle that took place, so then I would have been put in danger. Meaning, you really put me in danger. Baruch Hashem, everything worked out, but I'm unhappy. Okay. Very interesting story over here. Obviously, it's a gadata, and it needs to be treated as such, meaning with significance. But to be taken literally, maybe yes, maybe no. Not for me to say. It's above my pay grade.
You know how the story ends by the fact that they're both referred as Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi.
Right. Okay. But meanwhile, we're going to go on because just a little bit more to go. I do feel, however, that the music's going to start, and you know the music starts, so that's when I stop. But let's see if I could just run to the two dots. Tana Rabbanan Lomotar V'Lisa Isha Yomotar V'Achar Kach Isa Isha. So it's a question of Limud Torah or getting married. So what should you do first? First, learn Torah, then Isa Isha. V'imeyefsher lo below Isha. Now, in other words, it's marrying a woman. There's a powerful, right? It's powerful. Those are powerful forces in terms of getting married. So then, and if he can't withstand, so then Isa Isha v'achar kach yom Torah. So then what you should do is that you should then get married and then learn Torah. Okay. Now, Amar Rabbi Yudah Amar Shmo Halacha Nosa Isha V'achar Kach Yom HaTorah Rabbi Yochanan Amar Rechaim B'Tzavero V'Yasek B'Torah. So Rabbi Yudah Amar Shmo says that the halacha is that first you get married and then you learn Torah. And to which Rabbi Yochanan's response is, well, I don't understand. The yoke is around your neck. You have the responsibility of a wife and supporting her and taking care of her. And you have all that responsibility. And now you're supposed to be learning Torah. I have a little pliki. The Gemara says over here, we do not have a debate. Sounds like we have a debate, but we do not. Halan v'halahu. It depends on which minhag we're talking about. Minhag Bavel or minhag Eretz Yisrael? Over here, you see the long Tosos over here that goes into tomorrow's daf. So Tosos offers an alternative pshat to that of Rashi. But it's the daf, and I'm just going to say over Rashi. And that is that Rashi says, so what would happen is the following. If you were B'nai Bavel, so where did you go learn? Interestingly enough, Rashi says the minhag was that you would travel to Eretz Yisrael to go learn. So the, and, so since you're learning in Eretz Yisrael, so what kind of home responsibility, what kind of domicile responsibility do you have? Zero, none. Now, it is a very difficult Rashi. I'm saying over the Rashi as if I understand it. It's a very difficult Rashi, meaning you're married and you're going away to learn, and so therefore you have no responsibility. Meaning, it's true, by the way, you don't have to take out the garbage, but it's also true that you do have a ksuva obligation to support and take care of your wife. So it's a little bit unclear what Rashi means by that, but I'm saying over the Rashi. So Rashi says, so therefore, get married and then go learn. And obviously also there's another difficulty in Rashi, and that is that if the whole point of getting married is so that your Yetzirah now will be abated, so if you now get married and then you went off on your way, a little bit strange, meaning, okay, hopefully it's self-evident what I'm trying to say. Anyway, so, but that's what Rashi says. Masha Enkin, if you're living in Eretz Yisrael, so that's the halan, right? So if you're living in Eretz Yisrael, so now, when you're living in Eretz Yisrael, so you're staying home, you're learning at home, and you're living at home with your wife, and now you're going to have all those responsibilities, which are going to obviously impede your progress in learning. So that's the Gemara's resolution of halan v'halu, at least the way Rashi presents it. And I admit Rashi is challenging, which is why Tosfos over here, very long Tosfos, very critical of Rashi's pshat. Let's stop over here.